Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Fans of Power Podcast. I'm Brian Ozone, and I welcome you to the only weekly podcast dedicated to He-Man and She-Ra and everything in between. And I'm here with my guys, as always, with Joe Amato and Tyler Baker. What's up, guys?
What's going on?
Not too much. I have an announcement to make. As of yesterday, I am an official staff member of HeManWorld.com.
Oh, cool. Okay.
My buddy, Captain John Atkin that runs it, and him, he's done wonders for me in the past, and, made me an official staff member.
How much did that cost you?
Yeah, right? Just something cool. It's a cool acknowledgement.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah,
as a podcaster, it's another outlet for us to get our work out there to the listeners, to maybe people who haven't heard it. So it's pretty cool.
John's a cool guy. We'll have to have him on sometime.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Because he's the guy that knows Blade, right? Anthony DeLongis?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. He knows a lot of guys. Yeah, he's actually been in quite a few movies as well. Joe, you had some stuff you wanted to say, so
I was going to give a couple little shout-outs to some fans. I mean, there's some dedicated fans that are usually always commenting or saying something. So I just wanted to say, thanks to Walt Hancock and Willis Wheeler, Peter Parker. Oh, I can't say your last name. I don't know if it's Quinus or something. I apologize. You can always correct me on it. And Gary, what's that?
Isn't that Spider-Man, Peter Parker?
on Facebook, his name is Peter Parker. The last name, Quinus. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but he knows who he is and people know him. So he's a cool guy, and I wanted to thank him for, always giving feedback and stuff. And there's another fan named Gary Cox. He's always commenting, saying stuff, and I promised him that I was going to bring up something that it was when we did our Jitsu versus Fisto episode. I was going to do it last week, but that's when we rambled insanely, so I completely forgot. So I told him I'd get him this week. He said he liked hearing what we had to say, and he has his own little Jitsu origin story. He asked if, if we could mention it, we'll mention it, and I will. He said, this is his Jitsu origin story. He said, Jitsu, a master samurai, steals his village's most precious jewels. He is caught, but not with the jewels. For punishment, his hand is cut off. Instead of selling the jewels, he forges himself a new hand, a skill he learned as a blacksmith by trade. Before the hand cools, he adorns his new hand with the jewels. He then forges himself a new blade, a blade he uses to remove those who lose to him in battle, his first victim being Fisto. This led to Fisto seeking out a means of revenge. This is why Fisto is gone for many years. He's been seeking out Jitsu. So that was his kind of fanfic story and how he kind of had a story of how he got the hand, the jewels, because remember I was talking about the jewels and why he battles Fisto. So I wanted to thank you, Gary, for your story. I loved hearing it, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a very solid backstory.
I like the idea of the hand getting chopped off. I mean, shit, they do it in the Middle East today that you get caught stealing, they chop your hand off.
You can almost say, like, Jitsu's kind of like from a Yakuza background, man, because they chop off fingers for running your mouth and stuff like that.
There you go, yeah. So, I mean, it's something that's, kind of hits home, it could be real in some sort.
Gary,
so, yeah, no, it's
hats
cool.
Hats off to you, Gary. That's a very solid backstory for both those characters and to keep tying them two together, not having any kind of nonsense of Fisto being Tila's real father, and he just punched a rock and was given a mechanical fist by Man at Arms. So,
yeah, and having a giant hand or however it was or whatever. But no, that's what I love. I mean, I just always love hearing what fans have to say and what they show and what they do. It's always cool.
Can you guys
hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Shoot.
Oh, wait. I think Tyler might have got a call again. Do you remember when this happened last time? And he blanked out on us. So don't worry, guys. Tyler will pop back up here. He'll be back. It's just a call he's getting. And we'll message him in the meantime. But,
That's very cool. I appreciate it. If anybody else has anything to say, always contact any three of us, four of us with Dirt. We're more than happy to acknowledge it, speak about it, you know, what we, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, there's another fan too. I was just going to bring one.
Sorry about that. Some jackass selling insurance called me on my phone again here.
We explained it to the listeners. We said you were probably getting a call like last time, and you'll be back. And sure enough, you are. So
yeah,
but it's probably Dirt. Dirt was sending you pizzas.
I'm doing whatever I can to get him off the show from that Bette Midler comment from a couple weeks ago. Still trolling that
really
Bette Midler.
Like the movie Ruthless People or something like that, man. Who'd have thought, man? Or maybe his wife has got like a major thing for beaches, and just the idea of that being mentioned on He-Man is just like he's...
You know, I can kick you right out of this chat. All I have to do is hit this little red button.
Like what happened?
Insurance guy again.
And so, well, one other thing is, another fan, Joshua Mead, he knows, I mean, we mentioned we were going to talk about, you know, Dragon's Gift, which that's what we're going to do today, but he did a really nice, unique piece of fan art, which tried to show in a couple days online, but again, I always like seeing what somebody can have an interpretation, not only with stories, but in art, and he has a different look of Granomir that I think fans might get a kick out of, because it's not the normal interpretation that we know of him, but...
Not pink, is he?
Well, the thing is, he's still going to color him, I'm
Does
sure he's going to keep him.
His wings?
And I, poor Tyler.
Strike two.
Strike. Oh Jesus! They're both going to be kicked off. It's going to be me just talking by myself, and Doug will be jumping in once in a while. But no, he didn't color him yet, and I'm sure he'll be red or green. But he gave him the wings. He gave him a helmet. But it's just a. You have to see. It's a cool look. So
is
I get
a beach.
Oh, that's it. Goodbye, Brian. Okay, it's me and you, Tyler.
Welcome to the Joe Show. This is the Joe Amato He-Man Podcast.
Welcome to the Fan of Power. Today, I am going to discuss Dragon's Gift, mini-comic, and the cartoon episode.
Man, Doug's like an angry mob boss here. He's just like putting out hits on everybody left and right here.
That's it. No, but so that's going to lead into this. I figured we would... discuss Dragon's Gift, because that's it's a really iconic episode, and, you know, mini comic too, but
yeah.
Seems like when you bring it up, more fans will sometimes, you know, gravitate towards the cartoon episode, obviously, but, you know, they really like it. So we thought we'd just kind of like discuss our thoughts on, you know, both versions of that story. But I guess, Brian, when you're thinking of Dragon's Gift, both of them, what was your thoughts of both stories, and, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, I kind of like both of them. Be honest with you, I like the Filmation adaptation of it, I guess you can call it, version or whatever. It's pretty cool because, you know, you see it played out. You know, you didn't have to kind of – wasn't a mini comic, you know, a 10-page, you know, 11, you know, whatever it was. But – the mini comic, I mean, Alcala, I can never say his name.
Alcala,
amazing. You know what I mean? The artwork is just it's top notch. So I mean, I have to go with the mini comic on it. And Granomir, it's just, I mean, to me, the first appearance of Granomir, was amazing. You know, in the test he gave He-Man and Teela, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, to me, it was just a solid story, you know, it was pretty much, it hit home for, you know, like humanity. It's like, be good to one another and one another be good to each other. You know, it was just a good story all in all. I mean, it was like its own moral without the moral at the end of Filmation. So that's what it was for me. So,
okay. All right. Tyler, thoughts on Dragon's Gifts? I'll say gifts just to encompass them both.
I don't know if we got enough time for me to say how much that particular episode means to me. I mean, because I can put it this way. It's an episode that even my dad could quote Granomir, because I watched that particular VHS tape so much as a kid. Like, and he remembered to this day, remembers Granomir as a very condescending character, and as a kid, I just thought he was like a real jerk for the most part, and didn't really appreciate it until I was
older.
until I was older, and I was, you know, they still had the tapes to rent at Blockbuster, and I was, you know, re-renting them and stuff like that. And the dialogue between him and He-Man, like when they first meet, and the music that's playing, and it just, it's incredible, because John Irwin he's playing both characters, and he's nailing both roles so well, as like Grandmother is wise, but he's like, I despise humans. I look down upon you. You're nothing but greedy and warmongering, and you know, you don't appreciate anybody or anything. And just constantly he talks down to He-Man immediately. Like the minute he says, you know, well, in that case, like I didn't say I respected the name.
Yeah.
It's wonderful dialogue, and it's not like people like the Dragon's Gift. That goes without saying, but I'm like, there's so much of that episode, and I'm just focusing on that one part, let alone the rest of the episode where the sorceress comes in and the telling Teela she can't help him out, you know, and things like that. But
I found that scary, you know, what you just said there about when the sorceress couldn't even help. You know, that was pretty freaky. Like, wait, the sorceress can't help break this spell? Because she said it was a magic that was older than even Castle Grayskull itself, like even before Grayskull, correct? Or something like that?
Yeah, before it's an ancient magic from a time before Castle Grayskull ever stood, is like the line she says. But what's cool about that is that when they ask Granber if he can help, it's like, of course they can. It's poor magic at best. Like he's slamming what Skeletor probably took a long time to practice to get that spell done, or
right,
or you know, so it just shows you, like, this guy he's not a throwaway character, and the things he's saying are not throwaway. I mean, Larry DiTilio just created this character that he's above and beyond a one-shot character, and obviously he showed up in many other episodes to come, even in She-Ra. Mm-hmm. But that first time we meet him, where he's just very he's very egotistical, and that's what makes him so great. And to see He-Man challenge him, essentially, is like, we don't have your gift, so do what you got to do. And the music plays, and Granamir's like, you know, it would be my right to do so, wouldn't it? And then it's his wisdom and compassion and the honoring of a bargain, and the lowers his head down and just acknowledges them for their honorable deed of saying, you know, we can't. And I love this line, and I get chills every time I watch this episode to this day when He-Man says, we will not take a life to save a life.
Exactly.
And Granamir just kind of like snarls, like looking down at him, because it's just like, he has to acknowledge this, that this human being has done something that even he can't look down upon. It's, I feel like I'm making love to this episode right now, man. I'm so turned on right now.
Do we have to play some music?
KY.
And
this episode of Fans Power is brought to you by KY Jelly.
Fans of porn? I don't know.
If I keep talking about Joe's never going to get his word in here, but I can't say enough. And I'll just keep it at that, essentially, because it's been my favorite episode for a long time. And Evelyn's plot is kind of challenging that spot. But Dragon's Gift has been the number one episode for over 10 years for me personally.
Yeah, no, it is very good. Like, and like I said, you know, the cartoon is better because it plays it out. You don't have to. You know, like you said, the music and the expressions and the way they speak. I mean, it just. It's different from the mini comic. It definitely allows the imagination to, you know, you don't need your imagination.
No, and the mini comic really kind of lays out the blueprint of what the Filmation episode is. I mean, there's Ice Hacker and Sky Tree, but there's no Tulamar and his kind of like wolf, you know, blue.
Yeah, they got the Manticore. Yeah.
Yeah. Manticore instead, which is featured in Orko's favorite uncle, the Manticore, finally shows up, but it looks nothing like that. But you got the ice trolls, and the famous ice hacker scene, which was on the VHS cover of that tape, was just a very iconic image. It's just like a big journey. And I always thought the library that they go to was just cool. Like, I just thought it was because they open up the book and see the map of Dark Smoke, and they turn and like, oh man, it's so cool. You know, it's just, there were just so many details that Filmation put in there, and Laird DiTilio just, It was a masterpiece of a script.
His episodes are really good, too. I have to say, he was a really good director or producer, whatever title he had.
Yeah, he was a writer.
Whatever he did. I mean, he nailed it, man. I mean, he really nailed it. He knocked it out of the park for us He-Man fans. He really did a good job.
Yeah, you'll find his name attached to some of the best episodes of the series, both season one and two.
Yeah, that's the Dragon's Gift for both of them. I mean, there were so many things I loved about them both. You know, like when you speak of the Filmation cartoon, you know, it starts off where they're waiting, you know, where's Prince Adam? And then that they kind of play out where, you know, he's like, oh, he's doing something for, I forgot what it was, Man at Arms said. He said he was doing something.
It's government business.
Government business. And then Tilo was like, oh, she mentioned Amanda. Some girl. Lady Amanda, is that government business? Even kind of portraying, hey, that's that kind of playboy He-Man that we're – I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that we're talking about DC.
He-Man and Arms tells her to shut up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, now, like, you know, that's – I'm going to get to that too about kind of like keep quiet, you know, what you're saying. I will get to something like that. But, you kind of hear the playboy version of Prince Adam, which obviously they're not going to ever really show too much or go in-depth how maybe you could have felt like the early DC stuff like was, you know, when we were talking about that. Right. But so here comes in, was it Theron? Did he call himself Theron Skeletor, or what was his name that he went by?
Ambassador Theron.
Okay, Ambassador Theron. He comes in to present a gift to King Randor, and it's a bust. It's like an emerald-looking bust of King Randor.
An amulet.
Yeah, well, see, this is what we're getting. So it's an emerald bust, and he's going to present it to him, and then that's when Man-at-Arms notices Skeletor's sword. He's like, wait a second, that's Skeletor's sword. And he runs and he grabs it. He turns into that crystal, and he's frozen, and then zoom, the robe comes off, and that face is there, and then it turns to Skeletor. And it was kind of scary to see how he looked like that from that, but
that was Freddy Krueger stuff, man.
Yeah, it was, you know, freaky stuff when you're a kid to see, and he wanted to obviously give that to Man-at-Arms so he could, you know, take the throne of Eternia. His plan backfired. He had to get out of there. So they have to find a way to reverse this. That's why they go to the sorceress to see, you know, what can she do. She says that, you know, she can't do it. There's a magic that probably can exist, but it's somebody named Grandemere that has it. And they're like, where is this Grandemere? And the sorcerer said there was a pact that, you know, was between her and the dragons, the Dark Smoke, or however she said it, to where she can't reveal where they're at. Otherwise, it'll bring their wrath and it'll upset them. So that's when she says, where magic fails, human knowledge
may succeed.
And that's when she's like, I'll start you on your journey. Bam. That's where they appear in the library, and then they have to figure out, hey, they know where to find Grandemere. And that's when they go, and Grandemere, like you said, that's when he's – the first time we see him, and you're right. It's like, man, this guy's a punk, like, because he was so arrogant, snobby. Like, Grandemere – what is it? How did he say that one, like, Grandemere doesn't, you know, listen, or Grandemere does? He had one – I know you know the line, Tyler. There's a way they said something to Grandemere, but Grandemere says – something like, you know,
Grandemere does not fight humans. Grandemere wins.
Wins. That's the line. I loved hearing that. And then when Tila spoke, he's like, who's this woman speaking without?
Yeah.
I love,
he calls her a little girl.
Oh, that was it. Back, I mean, for some reason, Craig, I was like, dang. So, you know, first you got Man-at-Arms trying to keep quiet. I was like, poor Tila's getting so disrespected.
And she needs it, man. Someone needs to put that one in her place.
And so then Grandemere even uses his magic to, like, you know, just show. He was holding He-Man, and the He-Man was trying to, like, you know, kind of fight it off, and then Grandemere let off, and then he's like, I think he said you show courage. Is that what he said, Tyler? You show courage?
Yeah, it says, you have courage, something I have seen in very few of your race.
Yeah, and what
Tyler, did you have like writing credits on this episode?
He watched
I wish
it
I
a lot.
Say that, believe it, like I said, there's certain episodes I have memorized verbatim, and that
and
that
I knew you would. Yeah. That's why I figured if there was ever a gap, if I didn't know the exact way something was said, I knew Tyler would.
I'm not trying to sound like a know-it-all. I'm just like, I just asked me to fill in the blanks there. If you
know. No, not at all.
I love it.
You're super fat.
No, yeah, because I love it, because I know you said you watch it a ton of times, and if your dad's memorizing the stuff, then my God, only what I can imagine you would know about it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so it showed, again, like you said, first how he was talking about, like, how that magic was absolutely nothing. Like, you know, obviously he could reverse the spell. It's absolutely pitiful magic, in his opinion, what was done to turn Man-at-Arms into that crystal. But to see how he was, he put He-Man into that, you know, force field binds or whatever, and He-Man wasn't breaking them. That what made me think, you know, Jesus, this Grandmaster is one strong sucker. What is his magic like? So you're right. They eventually venture out. They go to the ice mountains, go past the ice hackers, the trolls, blah, blah, blah. That's when they go into the forest. They go to try to find Sky Tree. And that's when you see the Treeprechaun, Tulamar, or whatever. And they go to him and they're getting ready to chop him down. And they explain their story of why they have to chop him down. And He-Man was like, because, you know, it's to save Man at Arms. And then that's when he mentions that he knew of a Man at Arms. He says,
right.
For his as long ancestors? As if well, not even ant. See, that's what the difference is between the mini comic.
Right.
In a way, he didn't say ancestors, but he said for all time, there's always been a Man at Arms to uphold, like, it's the good or do what's right. And at one time, years and years ago, a Man at Arms saved the forest from burning from some fire demons or some
the
kind
witch
of demon.
Is a fire.
The witch. Okay, so witch is a fire. So. That was he was like, so he'd gladly give a life, and then the He-Man was like, no, I can't do this. And then he goes back to Grandmaster, you know, by calling his name. Grandmaster respects what was done by showing wisdom. Yeah, he had to call out the name to go back to him.
Yeah.
And through showing his courage and wisdom and everything else, he gives him this book. And in the book was the spell to bring Man at Arms back. Now, that's when it transitions to this mini comic. Like you said, the cartoon, I love the music, the atmosphere, and obviously you can hear what's being said. But when you're a kid, when you're looking at a comic, whatever one you see first, when you start looking at a comic, you know what you're doing in your head. You're reading in the voices that you're hearing from the cartoon. You might not have the music, but you have the voices. This one started different, though. It started right off with this guy presenting an amulet. Like you were saying earlier, Brian.
Right, right.
This amulet has Skeletor's sign on it. When Man at Arms touched it, he turned into that crystal again. But this is why this version, at least from what happened, scared me more than the cartoon. Skeletor said, "Fool, in 2 days the crystal will shatter and that will end Man at Arms' meddling." For me, that really frightened me as a kid reading that mini comic thinking, Jesus, he's gonna shatter. You know, I mean, he's gonna be dead.
Yeah, it was serious. Yeah,
it was serious. That's what you were getting on this mini comic. I mean, unlike the cartoon, obviously they're not gonna frighten you. They never at one point said Man at Arms is gonna shatter in 2 days. It's just like, let's find a cure. You know, you figured, oh, otherwise he'll just be stuck as a crystal. But this said he was gonna shatter. So obviously they transform, and this time they didn't have to go to the sorceress. They didn't have to find out all this information from the sorceress. It's wrapping it up quickly. Like you said, this one was written by Michael Halperin. I mean, we all know him. But it was probably – it was pretty much wrapping up, you know, it's doing it quicker. And they had to – they knew where – they had to get it from Grandmaster, and they had to go to Darksmoke. Even though I don't think they mentioned Darksmoke, I just think they said they had to find Grandmaster. And they're taking off, and the attack track is He-Man, and Teela's on Battle Cat. Just to let you know, the attack track must have just disappeared in this minicomic because I don't think it ever appeared ever again after they jumped by the ice.
It kept on, and He-Man jumped off and just kept rolling, man. It never stopped.
Exactly. That's why I was like, what happened to the attack track? Well, they're going back. They just have Battle Cat. It's like there's nothing else, no other vehicle. But anyways, you're right. They had that ice hacker again, a different-looking ice hacker.
I like how He-Man throws a shout-out to one of my favorite bands, Motley Crue, in the comic book, too.
Oh, yeah. Did he say that when he encountered those?
There's a Motley Crue, these creatures of doom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was. That was. So they encounter Grandmaster, and obviously you don't get a whole bunch of, you know, dialogue back and forth, and you don't get this kind of cockiness. You just get basically he wants you a Sky Tree again. This time when they go, Sky Tree isn't guarded by, you know, Treeprechaun, Tulamar, and those things. It's a manticore. And he grabs a manticore, he throws it around, watches out for its tail. And then, you know, they say, we need your help to save Man at Arms. And then that's what you said, Brian, earlier. About the ancestors. This time they did refer to ancestors of Man at Arms. And he said, but this time, I think he said something like he spared his life. So I guess you could say same thing, maybe saving it if you wanted to interpret, did, you know, the force get saved again from something? Or was there a reason he spared his life differently? I don't know how you'd want to interpret that. How would you guys interpret what he meant when he said spared my life?
Yeah, I mean, maybe getting chopped down or a forest fire or something like that, you know, like something, you know, in those words.
Yeah, because I was trying to decipher. I was like, well, was you know, he being threatened to get chopped down by Man-at-Arms, and Man-at-Arms, you know, this ancestor spared his life? I just, you know, like you said, it could be up for debate on how you wanted to interpret
Maybe
that.
he was, you know, probably some people are just going to chop him down for some simple firewood, and you know, the previous, you know, Man-at-Arms ancestor realizing, you know, look, this tree is actually alive, like even more so than a regular tree. It's like we can't just chop it down because we need it for houses or
Yeah,
firewood.
or you know, when it was just like a sapling or something like that, you know.
Yeah, or maybe they thought, well, they could sell it because it's a particular type of wood that could make some very fine furniture. Who knows?
That's right. That's what I
Yes.
get. They love the sky trees of that forest.
It
But
makes
yeah, see,
wonderful upholstery.
yeah,
Sky
see.
trees are top notch, man. They make the best Italian, you know,
You might imagine how much money
furniture.
that would
Forget
take, like at like the attorney in like flea markets. Like, dude, it's made from sky tree. Oh man.
about
On the black market, it sells for a
Yeah,
lot.
it's like you gotta have like give it like a secret like handshake or like tap your nose and sort of like, come on, I got it
Yeah,
back here.
yeah.
That's pretty good.
You guys
But
just something out of the ordinary, like in that like in
right.
the bodega when you go to the bodega in geez, what movie was that? Oh, forget it, man.
That's all right. Yeah, and you can have a nice sky tree on whatever furniture. But no, so that's what I mean. You get a little different interpretation on, like, you know, before in the cartoon, it's just Man-at-Arms, you know, a Man-at-Arms has always been there, and one time a Man-at-Arms saved that forest from being burned,
Yeah,
which is,
that's what I got out of the cartoon
yeah.
comic was that there was always a man at arms on Eternia, you know, like there was always that that title, so to
You
speak.
know what's cool about that too? I liked when he said that, because when he said, for as long as there's, you know, they can recall, there's always been a man at arms to stand up for good, or however he phrased it, to protect. And that makes his title seem so powerful me or powerful to me when he said that, because I mean, you know how we know of He-Man, but you know, like from the cartoon, we never heard about how there's always been a He-Man, you know, forever and ever. Sure, in current stuff, you could say there's been tons of He-Mans, but for the cartoon, it's
We
just
don't
always been
acknowledge
He-Man.
that idea.
We don't acknowledge. Okay, well, like I said, it was cool because it seemed like it almost made Man-at-Arms as his role even kind of more important throughout history than obviously He-Man's, even though they've always waited for that legendary hero. It's been cool. So it's like I said, I guess I brought a question up on a couple little pages, like, who do you think, hypothetically, if He-Man and She-Ra were to take a vacation, you know, just a fun little hypothetical from their worlds, who do you think could be the person that could take over their role for each world? And there was a couple people that said Man-at-Arms, you know, for He-Man's role, and you know, it almost, it, like I said, going by the cartoon, it almost seems like that would make kind of a little more sense in a way, just from hearing the
Right.
cartoon role. It seemed like it gave him some importance.
Yeah, it'd probably be my pick too. I mean, yeah, you know, it'd probably be him, maybe with somebody else, or but Man at Arms probably be, you know, next in line at least. I mean, he's the most proficient character, profound character, or one of the, you know, top few. You know, that's always around, or in every almost in every episode or every mini comic. I mean, you know, so he's got to be a top choice for that.
Definitely, definitely. So
Yeah.
we'll get into some of that too. I'll quickly say that it pretty much ended exactly the same. You know, Grandemir then, you know, gives them the spell to free Man-at-Arms. I mean, you know, turn Man-at-Arms back normal. Bam, there you go. But here's just a, you know, to bring up another little thing about the differences between.
Hold on, and in the comic you got Teela on Battle Cat and He-Man running, and he says, "Hurry, Teela, our time is short." He's
I know, so I was like,
and
where
then
the hell's the attack track? Just get on the attack
exactly,
track, you have.
exactly, yeah.
You left it back of the ice trolls that they're smashing away for parts. I don't understand. But you're right, I did say after he was giving the spells, like, hurry. I was like, yeah, He-Man, you made it go quicker. You know,
Bet the
that.
treads were like stolen, like as the Evil Wars like just stole the treads off the attack track to sell those, and you know,
You imagine?
along with the
Yeah.
Sky Tree bark.
An extra little panel, you see the attack track with the wheels or the attack track
It's like
treads
put up on
gone.
cinder blocks, you know, Beast Man and Trags are
It
walking away with the treads.
got jacked by Beast
Yeah.
Man and Triclops in the background. I always wonder what them shadows were. But so there's two things that were, I mean, a thing that was difference between the cartoon and the mini comic with Grandemere and his living quarters, if you will. And that's in the cartoon, you know, he's in the big pit, comes out, and you see around the pit there's, you know, gold and jewels, right, and vases and pots and all types of treasures, which they've always said that's
and
how
that goes back even like in Dungeons and Dragons.
Exactly.
And
dragons have always love treasures. But the mini comic, to me, this was my message. It absolutely might not mean it at all, but the mini comic Grandemere, he's surrounded by books, which I almost thought they were trying to give a little message that maybe that's a true treasure, you know, to be just like almost like in the cartoon, how they were talking about knowledge being you know, so important. That's what I got out of that, that they surrounded him with books as being a great treasure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they say books are knowledge, right? So who knows?
Well, Tilia made that a point about the dragon's gift, like with the episode that he wrote, because in his interview on the original DVD release, he says that, you know, he wanted to emphasize that the hero needs to, you know, use books and read, you know, to kind of he wanted to give reading and learning like a very like large piece of importance in the story, with them having to actually research and read books to get answers. And he says it more elaborately than what I'm saying right here, but that's kind of what he's saying in a nutshell. So to tie it in with what you're saying, Joe, like he intentionally wanted to put an emphasis on reading in his story. And whereas you're saying that Grandmere is surrounded by books in his cave, there's definitely seems to be a connection of like emphasizing that children need to read books.
Yeah. I think it's a good, like I said, it's a good message. And one other question before I, you know, kind of say, you know, hey, which one kind of you guys prefer? Tyler, did you say that, I don't know who you said it was, but didn't somebody talk about Grandemere even before the mini comic or cartoon, that it was in some kind of like, you know, role playing thing?
Yeah, Larry did. He wrote it in like his kind of like a role playing game that he did for Flying Buffalo, which is a magazine for role playing games back in the, I think, 70s and 80s. I know nothing about role playing games, but I know that was a magazine that he wrote for, and he came up with, that's where he came up with the idea of Grandemere and Dark Smoke. That was
before all the He-Man stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Nice.
It kind of makes me think that maybe, you know, because since Mattel and Filmation were working so closely together on character concepts and obviously stories, because The Dragon's Gift and Slave City also became episodes in the first season of Filmation. So it's they probably really liked the idea of The Dragon's Gift and said, hey, let's make that a mini comic. The story is so good. And even the design of Grandemere looks, you know, almost spot on, other than, you know, obviously the color scheme. And he's, you know, he looks kind of very sad in the mini comic, or in the cartoon. He's very kind of has a regal presence about him.
I could kind of agree with that, because like in the mini comic, he looks more aged, if you will, or maybe worn, tired, older, warts on the tail, you know, no wings, and so it's a different feel between them both. But I guess, between them both, while I like the being surrounded by the books of knowledge and finding, like I said, Skeletor and what he said with Man-at-Arms more frightening than the mini comic, I think I might have to go with the cartoon as my favorite. I did love the portrayal of Grandemere, how he spoke, just everything. I guess like you said, maybe watching it is different. I mean, it's so freaking close. I think if there's elements of the mini comic and the cartoon, or even vice versa, well, yeah, it had to be the elements from the mini comic and the cartoon. It could have been just super awesome, but I guess I'll go with the cartoon as my favorite between them both. What about you, Brian?
It's kind of like a toss up, man. I agree with you with everything you said about the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
I love the portrayal of Grandemere. I love that the whole story. But again, I mean, the mini comic. I think I read the mini. I don't remember what was first, but I mean, the mini comic is great. It's just. The mini comics always are a favorite of mine. I'm a fan of comics, and I was a fan of the mini comics. But I'll go with Filmation on this, though. I'll have to say Filmation. I mean, just everything about it was great. It was a great episode. It really was.
They're close. I mean, you're right. They're so close, but okay. All right. And Tyler.
As if you have to ask.
Okay, that's Filmation. Back to the
simple formality here. I don't know, people are like really on the edge of their seats. Like, oh, dear God, what is he going to say?
What's Tyler going to say? Tyler's going to say, okay, you heard it, folks. He said he likes the mini comic.
Oh, right. Yes. I didn't even know there was a mini comic of that until I was in high school. Like, whoa, they made a mini comic of the Dragon's Gift.
Wow.
So, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea about that. I mean, it's been that VHS tape of the Dragon's
Gift. I have one if you want to rent it. I know Blockbuster's gone, so
I have my own
Brian Blockbuster or whatever.
Brian Busters, yeah.
There you go.
I got Brian a library Buster. Of VHS tapes in my He-Man room already. I take pride in that collection. Believe me. To even tie it back to this, like, that was my first like purchase of a movie, was buying a pre-rental VHS tape from a mom-and-pop video store that was going out of business.
Which
was a He-Man rental tape, and it wasn't the Dragon's Gift, unfortunately. I didn't see it to buy at the time, I wish I had, but I eventually did buy a copy of it, I think, off eBay when I was in high school.
I never rented. That's it, you know, like I said, I never rented any of the cartoons because, like I said, I was always watching them on TV, and when they just went off the air, they just went off the air, and I wished in a way I could have rented, just maybe I would have absorbed
or something. Yeah, I'm with you with that because, like, the mom and pops, VHS rental stores went away. And, you know, we only had a Blockbuster here in New York City, and they didn't carry, you know, He-Man and whatnot. So, you know, once they all went off, you know, the Power Hour went off the air, that was pretty much it for me.
That's where that works in my event, because my Blockbuster and actually most of Moran are all carried He-Man tapes until they eventually started selling them off. I'll just share a quick little memory of this is because I was renting these tapes all through the 90s and into the 2000s. Like, I was just renting them all the time. And my parents still couldn't understand, why are you still watching He-Man cartoons? And I remember this one particular time, one of the guys at Blockbuster, there was like a regular staff, and we were regular renters there. And I had rented The Greatest Adventures of All VHS tape, and he made a remark. Oh, man, awesome. He's renting He-Man. And my dad kind of, like, just did a double take, like to see like an adult. This was a guy that was much older than me. I was probably like in middle school at the time when I was renting it. And the guy said, "Shoot, yeah, after hours, we pop in all the classic 80s cartoons and watch them here at night." And my dad just at that point realized he couldn't say anything to me anymore. That
was,
you
know, it. Yeah, the
that
story.
Was it. And my dad had like a newfound respect for that. So
that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, yeah. I wish I could. I wish I could have, like I said, the other reason I wish I could have rented them is, you know, you got to know of them and rent them. I never really even had a thought of renting them, but you got to appreciate and then eventually buy those and then have the cool artwork that was on them or however the many different volumes or whatever they showed. And I didn't get to experience that. And, you know, it's a cool thing that you got to do and a lot of fans got to do that.
Yeah, but what I got to do is what you guys got to do was what I always wanted to do as a kid, because I didn't know what time He-Man came on until I was in kindergarten. It came on 8 o'clock on the USA Cartoon Express, and I had to go to school at 8:10. So I got to catch the opening sequence and what episode it was, and next thing you know, I'm being thrown in a car to be put to work for 8 hours.
Wow.
You know, learning my ABCs. So that was as close as I ever got to actually seeing. I remember seeing She-Ra on TV as a kid when I got out of daycare. But
We had the Power Hour here, man. It was cool. You know,
I think everybody did. It may have been on where I was at, but because I think I was 3 years old when I got into He-Man. I was 5 years old when I was in kindergarten and the Cartoon Express was on. So it may have been on, but I didn't have time schedules for TV shows like memorized when I was 3 and 4. So it was just kind of, if I found it by accident, great. But I knew for a fact that all the video stores in my area all carried at least one or two He-Man tapes to rent. So that's how I got my fix.
Okay.
Yeah, but I do have to say, though, the cartoon artwork on some of them are really cool. I mean, I own, I think, almost all of them, and, you know, some of them are pretty cool. They're, excuse me.
The original, like the Columbia Pictures release before Magic Window, did. I think those are some of the best ones because of the black. A lot of VHS tapes that were released through Columbia Pictures home video RCA.
RCA.
Like the black box with the red trim around it. Like a lot of movies like Ghostbusters and Willow and the Pippi Longstocking movies and stuff like
that. Did they ever really say, I mean, you know, because I never went in depth about it, and I'll be honest, I never tried to research, but after, you know, recently seeing all those different ways some of those RCA ones were done, I believe, they had this kind of like a painted type of look of the characters of the Filmation, you know, like on the cover. It was slightly different. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
A lot of them were like stills of certain angles of the cartoon because, like, on House of Chakotay, like, He-Man has this kind of arms out pose, which is part of the animation cell after he sliced open the door to the House of Darkness. He kind of poses, and that's what's on.
You think they might have used like the stills from the animation cells themselves?
But they're slightly colored a bit differently.
Yeah,
but most of them are, most of them, if you look at them, you will have seen images like the Volume 9, I think, which is Evil-Lyn's Plot and Disappearing Act. There's a shot of He-Man kind of standing with.
How the hell do you remember this stuff?
Because he rented the piss out of him. He rented him to
death. I'm sitting in my bedroom and I'm not looking
Volume
at anything
9.
He-Man really. Yeah.
You definitely know, He-Man. Definitely He-Man standing there.
And this
there,
is the
Steven.
One that where He-Man's harness is colored brown here. Hey, look, I'm geeking out here. But look, this is a story for another episode. I'd love to sit and talk at least for a good solid hour about the members of Rennie VHS.
Well, we could do that, but I'll bring up one quick thing. See, I just have one of those laser video discs, and on the cover is He-Man and Teela, and in the background is a big silhouette. Yes.
That was from the VHS tape.
That happened.
Well, the thing is, on the cover, I mean, just that art is so different. It looks a lot different than Filmation. Almost doesn't look just like they recolored or something. It looks like a different art.
Well, the
artist.
Shot of Skeletor on that is like
is
the standard,
yeah
like, yeah.
But and he but He-Man, like, He-Man, he looks
He-Man
different.
And Teela look like they're painted because Teela has like her arm out, like you know, posing her wrist blaster, and He-Man's
yes.
Kind of, yeah, there are a few that definitely have like a kind of painted idea to it, but you can clearly tell like if they painted it. They looked at like probably like an animation cell of the cartoon and decided to kind of illustrate that. Some of them look more clear than others. Like they actually took it off a He-Man cell, whereas you know there's like an amalgam in certain ones where it looks like they took an exact cell, put that on there, and then somebody actually hand drew.
It looks like
He-Man.
It's chunkier.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because they did such a good job of putting it together. If you look at like the European releases of VHS tapes. Like for me personally, they don't hold a candle to the RCA Magic Window releases because they're just very elaborate in painting a picture of what is on this VHS tape. Whereas those is just kind of like a random picture from the cartoon, like just a scene of He-Man running or He-Man on Battle Cat, and that's it. You know, it's just it's not very creative. Not to knock anybody who rented them as a kid, and that's what you hold dear too, because I'm right there with you when it comes to that. But you know, I've looked at a lot of VHS tapes. I will say, I think they're from South America. There are some RCA releases of the He-Man tapes, and there's completely different artwork. Now that's
really?
Something that, and I've never seen them to buy, but I've just done like a Google search for the He-Man VHS tapes, and the ones from South America, they're like ours, and they have like brand new. Like original drawings of stuff from the cartoon, like creatures from the tar swamp, and they use different images on the back of the boxes and stuff. I mean, it's just awesome, man. I mean,
there's
not enough talk about VHS tapes. That's where we come in.
Yeah. Let's hold it off. I don't even think we're taking a commercial because this whole episode was kind of dedicated to Dragon's Gift and also, I guess a little bit of rambling about some of this, box art and the actual rentals of it, which is cool. But fans were wanting to hear us talk about Dragon's Gift, and that's always been kind of a favorite of mine from both the cartoon and mini comics. So we wanted to kind of just dedicate one specific episode to that.
And we did. So I guess we got another one in the books, guys, huh?
That's it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll do our traditional send-offs. And Tyler, if you have any Tyler to do like a bar mitzvah or a child, you know, anything. You can always find them at your local Blockbuster.
I'm willing to show up at like, you know, parties or like store openings. You know, I can do like autograph signings at your local mall and stuff like that, or I can just come to your party and just bug your guests about, you know. You know what volume 11 of the He-Man VHS release tapes? You know, it's House of Jacoby Part 1 and 2, man, you know?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, or, I mean, I could just, you know, it's like, you know what, Greatest Adventures of All, I had the missing segment from Diamond Rings with your parents. No one else has it on home video unless you had the VHS. I have it transferred on DVD. You know,
did you?
I really did. Yeah, I'm just pretending how I would bug people at like a party if I was invited to.
Oh, I got you. Real quick, I want to ask you that the one that you had transferred to DVD. What's the clarity? Is it real clear or good or what?
Yeah, well, it's VHS quality transferred on a DVD, so that's the way I would like to, watching the episodes on DVD is great, but to be able to watch them in that kind of gritty, kind of like grainy quality that you watched on when you were a kid. And to
something
have
special about it. It kind
of quick question. Do you think we'll ever get the greatest adventure of all and what was the other one? Skeletor's Revenge?
Do you think we'll ever get those released? I probably not. I think if they had the footage of those tapes, I guess it's Mill Creek that owns the rights for the home video releases right now. I think unless they really wanted to track down like a VHS tape, you know, like,
yeah,
and actually transfer that. I mean, I think you can find all that footage on YouTube. You can find the wraparound sequences from both Skeletor's Revenge and Greatest Adventures. But
why couldn't they want to try? That's what I mean. If they could find a really clear one, why couldn't they try?
Yeah, I don't see it
because they are. I mean, you to find Skeletor's Revenge like on eBay, it's not easy. I mean, I found a copy years ago and got it fairly cheap, but if you try to look for it now, it's like finding a needle in the haystack. You may find it, but the person who's got it is probably charging a decent price because it
is a decent price to the people that are owning the rights to it, and then see if they can, you know, get it from you, and then you can let them transfer it, and then we can get a clear one, and then we can have somebody restore it and clean it up, and bam, we can have the stuff that we were supposed to have.
Yeah, I mean, not to mention, too, it's got the entire full episode of Diamond Radius appearance, you know, because there's that cut scene of Skeletor, you know, scaring Orko and shooting the diamond ray at him. The vase comes down, covers his head, and Skeletor gives his nice send off saying, "Tonight we attack Castle Grayskull." That whole sequence was cut, you know, from the VHS tapes when the 2000X line came out, and every DVD release is still missing that scene. And James Etalk has a good video talking about that and has a restored segment of that entire missing scene. So it's possible people have got the entire episode. They've got, you know, the VHS tapes of all this stuff. So I'd like to think at some point somebody would want to put all this together and give the fans, like, all of it. Because those are two pieces of stuff that are still not accessible unless you dig for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is hard to find. So yeah, but so what do you have to say, Tyler? What's your bye-byes?
Okay, this week I think I'm gonna plug which episode? I had a couple episodes of mine real quick. I'm gonna plug Betrayal of Stratos from season 2. I think it's another underrated episode that doesn't get talked about a whole lot. That was my first time seeing Whiplash. And to see him kind of working on his own, but with Skeletor, like he's working in the demon zone for a demon called Krull. It's a good Stratos He-Man team up. It's Whiplash played as a very competent villain, not, you know, making remarks or saying, you know, silly stuff. I mean, he seems very serious. That's where the character Hawk shows up for the first time, played by Linda Garry, in that very kind of raspy voice that she does for certain characters. It's a brilliant episode. It's great. You get to see Triclops and Trapjaw and Beastman helping out Skeletor, like, you know, some of the original villains working in it. And then you got a season 2 villain showing up. So it's an absolutely fantastic episode. If you haven't watched, or if you haven't watched in a while, give it a shot. Some people may say it's kind of weak or something like that, but I couldn't disagree more with them, and I'll call them out when I see them.
There you go. Don't mess with Tyler. Jesus, like I said, he's the Rain Man of Masters when it comes to filmation and the renting and the episodes and everything.
Jeez.
Yeah,
I can't remember what I did 10 minutes ago.
There you go. All right. Well, there's Tyler. And me, I just, like I said, just always say thanks to the fans and for all your feedback and everything. I love and appreciate everything you have to say. I like anything that you give, you know, to try to help out, you know, when you're suggesting things. You know, like I said, I take everything to heart. I don't think anything good or bad, you know, when you're saying something. If somebody says it might seem negative, nothing's really negative unless you're actually calling somebody a bad name. If you got some constructive criticism, I appreciate it and I love it. And like I said, go to the All Encompassing Masters Universe page on Facebook, Masters and Mythos. That's a good place for doing buy and sell and trading. The Vintage Obscure page, that's just for vintage stuff. And that's good for buying, selling, trading, discussing. And Motu Nation, that's a new cool group that's on Facebook as well. So, you know, I always try to plug them too.
Cool. I would like to say thanks to the fans. Thanks to you guys. Thanks to our producer, Dirt. Thanks to Bette Midler.
Thanks what happened to Brian? I can't hear Brian no more. What
strike three, you're off the show. That's it. It's over.
Strike three, goodbye.
He's hanging out on beaches right now.
That's right. I'd like to, you know, say, go to all the Facebook pages, you know, like Joe said, go to HeManWorld.com, you know, go to all the pages, all the places. Thank you, you know, to all the fans that listen, all the people who write to me, asking questions. You feel free, if I don't get back to you right away, don't feel offended. You know, I'm busy. You know, I'm working. You know, I got kids. I will get back to you. Feel offended. I'm on a beach. Just remember.
Hanging out with Baba Hershey.
You know, it's just, I will get back to you if I don't get back to you in 5 minutes or, you know, because people have been like, hello. I will get back to you.
If it's something new adventures related, you will hear back from a little bit faster.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
My new adventures ring is different. So, you know, with that, rock on, everybody. Till next time.
Have a powerful day.
Stone Dar, man.
Stone Dar, rock on.
Love it.